Welcome to another exciting episode of the Street Photography Show. I am your host, Mark Rossi. Tonight, we will be speaking with Steve Walker, who was born and raised in the northeast of England, but has lived in Liverpool in the northwest for more than a decade, where he works as a journalist, photographer, and semi-full-time grandfather. Steve studied photography at college in the 1980s using black and white film cameras, then started shooting street photography in his 50s. Steve's work centers around people, either candidly or in abstract, aiming to capture dynamic but everyday scenes to portray the art in the ordinary lives of ordinary people. He is often asked to shoot events and venues professionally by clients who ask him to replicate same look and feel as his street photographs, and has seen his work featured in a number of niche street photography publications. So welcome to the show, Steve Walker. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. Looking forward to our chat.
Yes, so am I. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you currently live? What's your background? How'd you get into photography?
Well, where I currently live is Liverpool in the northwest of England. The city that's famous for the Beatles and all kinds of music. I've been here I'm in my 11th year here now. Originally, I come from the northeast, but from the kind of boundary of North Yorkshire. So I gather you had a guest on from Sheffield. We're in the same kind of broad neck of the woods there. But I have four Scouse grandchildren, as they call them. People who live in Liverpool are called Scousers. My two daughters settled over here and they've got two kids each. So when the first one was on their way, we moved over to Liverpool to be nearby. And I'm a kind of semi full-time granddad and luckily work from home with a lot of flexibility. So I'm able to work around school pickups. And just before this, I took one of my grandsons to swimming class. That's a fairly typical day for me. And then whenever I can, around all of that and everything else that's going on, then I get out and take photographs on the street as well. How I got into photography, I mean, originally, more than 40 years ago now, I did photography for O-level, which is a kind of just before you got to the high school level. So what, it'd be 16. The exams used to be called O-levels in those days, and I did photography O-level as a filler on my course and found that I really enjoyed it. So way, way back on black and white film, because the school couldn't afford color, shooting on a variety of different old style SLR cameras, go around, take pictures and managed to pass the exam with that. But we did all our own developing and all that kind of stuff. Fast forward then about 40 years where I'd always been interested but never really had the time to do much with kids and grandkids and work and various things. And suddenly I decided, well, I'm getting to an age, if I don't do it, I'm never going to. So it was everything was digital by then. I looked around and decided that I like the look of the Fujifilm equipment because it looks very similar in its operation to the old manual film cameras that I used to use, and got myself an old secondhand Fuji and really kind of moved on from there. Didn't particularly go into it at first to shoot street, but very quickly realized that that was what floated my boat and the thing that was most interesting but also most practical for me, because I'm never going to be in a situation where I can go off to the countryside for 2-3 days and try and shoot landscapes or something, but I can always get out on the street and take some pictures. And that's what really interests me. I like that, you know, if you look at the great photographers of the past and the kind of nostalgia factor that their work has, a lot of that informs what I'm trying to do when I'm going out on the street and trying to shoot people and make my own art out of ordinary moments.
So what Fuji camera model are you using?
I'm using an X-H1 as my primary one. I have an X-T2, which is the same sensor as a backup camera if I need it. But the X-H1 has in-body stabilization, which is useful. And it's a slightly larger, you know, Fuji cameras are generally well known for being very compact, but I have big hands. So it suits me to have something with a little bit more heft to it and a bigger grip, which means that when I'm carrying it around the city all day, then I can be comfortable with the use of it. You know, I don't swap around the models very much unless I have to for some reason, because I find the muscle memory is very useful to be able to get ready and shoot quickly.
Do you ever use your old film cameras?
They all belong to the school, to be honest. And once I left school, I come from a very working class background. So it wasn't like my family would have been able to pitch in for me for a camera, because I wanted to continue it going on after that. And my parents are gone now, but they didn't have even a telephone in the house until I'd left home and got married. So it wasn't really a place where it was ever going to be likely that I'd have a camera of my own for quite a while afterwards. And once we get into the whole thing about buying a house and trying to create a career and kids and all the rest of it, kind of sat by the wayside for a little while without any particular serious intent, but trying to keep up with what was going on. And once I got a digital camera, then that was, you know, that was kind of putting the wind in my sails, really. So that was the easiest thing to get straight back into it. And the 40-year hiatus didn't really seem like all that much in the end.
When you ventured out onto the streets, and I'm assuming they were the streets of Liverpool.
Yes.
What was your first impression when you first tried the genre? What was the feeling you were getting when you were first trying to do it? And let me, just to be clear, how long have you been photographing on the streets?
Probably as a street photographer for 3 years.
3 years. Going back to the question, how was the experience the first time you were on the streets doing street photography?
To be honest, it felt like a duck getting back into the pond. It was, it came very naturally and felt very comfortable. I never really had much of a fear factor or anything like that. I can sympathize with people who do, but I've always been, I guess, a little bit, I don't know whether you would say shameless or outside of the stream of those kind of human emotions where people get embarrassed about the idea of pointing a camera at somebody. So it felt quite easy for me to start that. And it felt very, you know, it felt like I'd found where I was meant to be.
We're kind of a old school sort of, you know, train of thought where we feel like maybe the best picture is the one that you actually do go up to the person and do put the camera up to your face and do take that shot. I do certainly do that still. I mean, there are times that I'll try to use the tilt screen on my camera, but for the most case, I do like to shoot with the camera up to my eye because it is what I'm used to, right? When you've done something for so long, and especially coming from film, you know, it really did train me to do things that way. So even though I have a digital camera, it's kind of like, you know, that saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks to some extent.
Yeah. I'm maybe slightly outside of that, that old saying, because to me, I probably started that way and then very quickly moved on to shooting more because it gives you different angles to, from doing everything at eye level. I'll shoot from chest, from hip. I'll sometimes hold the camera sideways and hold the viewfinder out to the side so I can take a shot without being too obvious. And sometimes I'll, you know, if I've got my 27 millimeter, which on the Fuji is a 40 millimeter equivalent, so standard, but, you know, wide enough, I don't even look. I might just take the shot without looking because I know what the lens is going to be framing for me.
It's interesting you mentioned that, the 40 mil. You know, because there's that argument, 35 versus 50, what's better, what's preferred, yada, yada, yada. I'm not going to open that can of worms, but it does exist, that discussion, right?
Yes.
And I've been finding, for me anyways, a 50 is what I prefer. Now, having said that, I do have a 40 millimeter Voigtlander Ultron that I absolutely fell in love with. Currently, it's sitting on my F3 HP. It's a fantastic lens, beautiful lens. I am in love with that lens. And I find that that 40 is actually a really nice medium. It's a compromise. It's a very nice compromise between the 50 and the 35. I'm actually really enjoying that focal length. I feel like that 40 is not as popular in most camera lineups. I think I still prefer 50. I think 40 has been working very well for me as well. And I think the results that I'm getting from that lens also motivate me to say that. The results that I get from that Voigtlander, the way it renders, and it's just phenomenal. You know, you've been shooting now 3 years, you say. When you went out there, I mean, was there any pre-planning on your part? Like, oh, I'm getting back into it. I'm going to be hitting the streets of Liverpool. Was there any preconceived ideas prior to hitting the streets? And if so, how has that changed over the 3 years of now shooting digital with your Fujifilm camera?
I tend to, you know, 90% of what I shoot is in Liverpool. So I know the areas pretty well that I'm going to go to shoot. You know, and if you look at people like Saul Leiter, for example, there's some of his favorite shots that he's probably taken over a period of some years, but they're all the, you know, if you know the area, you know that he's shooting in the same window or the same corner that he often would be going back to. So he knew where he was likely to get the shots that he wanted. And I'm a little bit like that, but I'll mix it up. So I'll head out and I'll go one day, I'll go clockwise around my usual route. Sometimes I'll go anti-clockwise. Sometimes I'll do something different and go to the far point and then walk back just to kind of switch it up a little bit. But I like to try and get out. You know, I'm not really a conditions-based person in that sense. So I don't care if it's pouring down rain or freezing cold or bright sun or fog or whatever. I probably, if anything, prefer the inclement weather shooting than the pure kind of beautiful sunshine or whatever. I think it's more interesting. And you get a lot more of it living in England as well anyway. So you might as well make the best of it. So I'll go out and then, you know, the common thread with what I do really is that I'm usually on the move. I'm not one of these people who is happy to park in the same spot for an hour and then photograph what comes into a particular frame. I much prefer to walk and then be adapting to the shots as they come, trying to look ahead and see, which is, you know, the psychological satisfaction for me in a lot of ways is that you've got to be totally absorbed in that when you're shooting street, and you've got to be looking ahead. You've got to be thinking about where people are moving. And it kind of suits the way my brain works anyway, to be mapping those things in 3D and trying to see where people are going to come together in an interesting conjunction or geometry, or, you know, some little conversation is developing or whatever that you think might make an interesting amazing shot. You know, I can appreciate these shots which are kind of semi-architectural, where people will find somewhere with very dramatic light or whatever, and they'll wait for somebody to walk into it. That doesn't float my boat in terms of actually going out and taking the shots. I'd much rather be on the move and trying to grab something which is very immediate and real.
When I look at your feed, you do strike me as a person that likes to photograph primarily other human beings on the street in their daily lives. I would say 98% all people just going about their day. You know, that photojournalistic style is what I would call it. Definitely the style that you portray in your feed. And that's definitely the style that I like as well. I'm very much a photographer who enjoys to document people in their everyday lives. And so I can totally relate with your approach. Also, I notice here that you shoot predominantly in color. I don't think I've seen any black and white yet in your feeds. I mean, I don't know if you shoot and then convert to black and white and just don't post, or you just don't prefer black and white. How would you answer that? Are you strictly color and that's it?
I probably post one or two shots a month in black and white, not much more than that. And that'll just be because there'll be a particular scene. And I think, yeah, that should be in black and white, that one really. But generally, I'm looking for, you know, the Joel Meyerowitz, I think it was, who said that color is part of what's there. So if you're trying to record what's there, record the color. So.
But then you also get the people that say color can be a distraction, right?
It can be. And, you know, I sympathize with that view. And if I'm doing portrait work for somebody or whatever, then I will sometimes do that in black and white, because I think it'll, you know, you can eliminate those distractions and capture something about the person. But in general, it's kind of part of that whole immersive experience for me. If you want to feel like you were there, then you weren't seeing it in black and white in the first place. So you would want the color to be in. I may very occasionally strip it out or mute it slightly if it's too distracting. But generally, the way I'm looking at a scene when I'm looking for the shot to take, the color will be a big part of what's coming. There'll be a particular red or a yellow or some other color that has caught my eye in the way the person fits into that. And I have a particular thing for red hair. Again, you know, that didn't base it on Meyerowitz at all, but he did a whole series of a book on large format film, taking portraits of redheads. And there's something that fascinates, maybe because when I used to have hair and mine was red as well, but there's something about the way that light catches it in the right circumstances that just really catches my eye. And if I see it, I have to take a picture of it.
That's actually a very good point that you mentioned. You want to present the image as you saw it in that moment. And that is true. I mean, by retaining the color in the image, that's really what our eyes are seeing, right? Our eyes do not see the world in black and white from a physiological point of view. They see the world in a color point of view.
Color has a lot to do as well with how the scene felt. So, you know, on my Instagram and all that kind of stuff, I describe myself as an impressionist street photographer, in the sense that I'm not trying to exactly replicate what my eye saw physically, but I'm trying to make that scene feel for somebody looking at it like it felt for me to take it, which isn't necessarily always exactly the same. So I tend to shoot in quite a flat profile to begin with, and then tweak the scene to look to me how it felt to take the shot at the time and convey that to people. So I'm not an absolute documentary photographer in that sense. I'm not an ultra realist. You know, I will tweak the colors around so they feel like they felt to me, because the sensor is never going to catch things in exactly the same way that the human eye does.
I notice here when I'm looking at your feed, you do have a consistency to your images. And, you know, like other photographers I've spoken to prior to you, and just, you know, being in photography for so many years, everybody has a workflow in post, and you certainly have one. How long did it take you to come up with this post-processing technique that you have? Because all your images, predominantly from what I see here anyways, certainly in the latter part of your feed, they all have a consistency to them in terms of how they're edited and how they're presented. How long has it taken you to develop that uniqueness of editing that is you? This is a Steve Walker image.
I think it probably took me the first 9 months of shooting to decide how I like to shoot, in terms of actually the type of frames I want to capture, the distance I want to be from people. You know, I like to mix it up with some abstract shots sometimes as well, probably about 80-20 in terms of the, you know, kind of pure people street photography and the rest being abstract. Once I'd worked that out, then I had to work out how best to kind of get to where I thought the pictures should finish up once I'd taken them. And it probably took me the best part of another year to settle on a routine of production that satisfied me, but wasn't too time consuming to have to, you know, process hundreds of images and work each of them individually to a custom recipe every time would be cumbersome. But I knew how I wanted the images to look. I just had to find the tweaks and tricks, if you like, within the process that would let me get to that as efficiently as possible.
And do you use Adobe, or are you using another editing software?
I primarily work in Lightroom and then into Photoshop. There are things with that Lightroom does very well. There are things that Photoshop does very well. Some of the things they do the same, they do in this, get there in a slightly different way that suits my process better. So I'll kind of do basic stuff in Lightroom, usually very basic, you know, just put a, I've created my own preset on there that suits me and I know it's going to work well with what else I want to do in Photoshop and then finish it off in there. Each image is quite a quick process now, but, you know, I spent a lot of time experimenting to see what I liked in the first place.
I do the same. I would say predominantly spending most of my time when I'm editing my work in Lightroom, and then I move over to Photoshop to do other things. So I can totally relate with that. And for all I know, I think a lot of photographers work that way as well.
Yeah, I suspect that most photographers, you know, end up on their own kind of mix of those two softwares. There are people who prefer Capture One, etc. And, you know, for Fuji files, some people swear by that, but I don't think you can do as much with the image in there. And, you know, so I just have I'm trying to get something that looks, isn't necessarily natural, but feels natural by the time you finish with it, if you know what I mean. So I don't personally enjoy images that are over-processed to the point where everything is either too clear or too over-contrasty, over-emphasized in terms of trying to make one particular part of the image stand right out and, you know, go for ultra 3D depth and everything. I learned on film. So ultimately, I think what I'm always trying to do is get back to the way the shots look or looked on film in a way that pleases me. And again, if anything, I'm probably looking for something like a Kodachrome kind of look to the images. And there's not one Kodachrome look, obviously. Different photographers that used it came out with different end results. Relatively contrasty, relatively rich colors, particularly in the reds and the yellows and that kind of thing. And then get to that. But if it takes me more than a couple of minutes these days to finish an image, I'm probably playing around with it too much. So I'll go back to the beginning and start again.
When you were growing up learning photography in the film era, and then you came back to it in the digital era, what did you find as a photographer? What did you find was the biggest difference between the two technologies of the eras? And what did you like about each of them? And what did you not like? In other words, what did you find were advantages and disadvantages to both?
The major advantage really has been the kind of convenience factor and the fact that you can see what you're doing as you go, which makes the whole, for me, as somebody who was then learning street photography, it made things a lot easier to monitor what I was doing and kind of refine what I was doing as I went forward, rather than having to shoot 36 shots of something and then send it off and wait for it to come back from the developer or whatever, or in the old days, develop it myself, and have to go through all that before you got to the point where you could see whether you liked what you did. So it sped that process up a lot. What I don't like is over perfection, and what I miss from the old kind of cameras and the old lenses, and why I have a couple of vintage lenses as well, is because I like the imperfections and I like the, you know, the character resides in those things really. So where a lot of people are saying, well, how sharp is this lens, and, you know, can it be sharp from corner to corner and stuff, I mean, actually the lenses that I use are sharp from corner to corner, but one of the first things I do when I start processing the image is take all the sharpness out so that I can build it back how I want it. So I'm not looking for to see every pore and every follicle on a person's face if I'm shooting. I want the overall image to look right. I'm looking for a particular glow that you would get with film, old things like halation that you get with film and so on that I quite miss, that I'll put back in one way or another, just to make that image feel less pristine but more organic.
I found that with digital, you can become too lazy, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
You can rely too much on chimping. You can rely too much on the technology in your hand because it is so powerful and it is so convenient, as you pointed out, that you almost risk losing the skills that you learned when you had a film camera. And so I think part of why I still shoot film is because of that. I still want to retain that skill, that feeling of shooting. For probably the last 4 years, have been doing more film than digital. Now, before that, I was probably doing no film. I was really absorbed in my digital equipment. And then I realized, well, you know what? I think I need to push myself to shoot film again. And I have been. And now I'm at that crossroads again where I'm like, well, maybe I'm going to now do digital and film. So when I do go out, what's happening lately is I'll walk around with my digital. So I'll have my Olympus and I'll walk around with a film camera. So I'll have my bag and I'll have a film camera and a digital camera in my bag. And I'll just like, I think on this shot, I'm going to pull out my digital. On this shot, I'm going to use my film. And I like that. I love that choice. When I reach into my bag, it's like, sometimes I play games with myself. I'm like, okay, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Okay, it's this one. So, I mean, it sounds kind of silly maybe, but that's the way I do it now. I use both. What are some of your favorite books and or movies pertaining to photography? What have been some books and movies that have inspired you, if you don't mind sharing that with our listeners?
Yes. I mean, I doubt it'll be anything that you wouldn't hear from other people, but obviously The Americans was, you know, one of the big inspirations when I first started looking at what street photography was so that I could decide if I was going to do it. Again, maybe because I mostly shot on black and white as a kid and that was all in black and white. But again, you know, when I first started going to the street to shoot, there was a few people said, well, some of the shots you're taking reminded them of Robert Frank. So I was interested to have a look and see what that was all about. I wouldn't say I necessarily kind of, you know, he's the biggest influence on it, but I do love his work. And I love the, you know, the kind of skill he seemed to have for grabbing the right moment. Probably my favorite street photographer out of anybody is Saul Leiter. Any of his books that are coming out in the past few years, they'll be sure to grab whenever I can. Especially his color work. I mean, he shot in black and white as well, but I absolutely adore what he did with color shooting on expired film. And it gave it a particular look, which is, you know, which I will say does inform some of what I'm trying to do when I finish a picture. I love Herzog. You know, all those kind of people really that were shooting in color at the time and were, you know, pioneers in it, but not necessarily known until later on in their lives. So most of the books aren't necessarily ones that are very old because they only really got recognized in the later part of their lives. But I'll grab anything. I've just had my birthday this week. So that was my wish list that my kids knew to work their way down and look for presents for me from. So.
Right, right. Well, happy belated birthday, by the way. When you're photographing, do you ever think back to one of your inspirations, one of your idols, one of their images, perhaps? Do you ever say to yourself, how can I make this like a Saul Leiter image? Or what can I take from Saul Leiter to make this image my own? Do you think in that way when you're out there photographing?
Maybe more the second one than the first one. I'm never trying to, you know, I don't want to just make derivative stuff. So I'm trying to make my own vision into an image. But they, you know, I've absorbed so much of their stuff and I like so much of their stuff that, unconsciously, no doubt there are elements, particularly the abstract stuff, I would say, more than anything. So I would say the normal, for want of a better word, you know, the standard street shots that I take are less influenced by Saul Leiter, but the abstract stuff that I do is very much kind of grows out of what I've seen of his and that I've enjoyed and a certain feel he got to those images. So if I'm trying to grab somebody, if I'm particularly deliberately shooting out of focus, for example, you know, that may well be affected in some way by the stuff I've seen of his where he would do that. Aim for or focus on something that you wouldn't expect to be focused on in the image, but let the other stuff just carry an atmosphere to fill out the frame. And possibly again in the fact that he wasn't afraid to block out large parts of the frame when he was taking a shot so that the action was concentrated into a particular area. That appeals to me as well. So I'll look for the places or the shot, you know, the kind of scenarios where I can do that too. So in those areas, maybe a little, that's more so when I'm out on the street and just taking the pictures that catch my eye as I'm going along. That's mostly me with maybe a little bit of Rob Frank thrown in without necessarily realizing.
Would you say Liverpool is a friendly towards street photographer sort of city? Or would you say you do get the odd confrontation that you wish you hadn't been involved in?
In 3 years, I've only had one situation where anybody really took exception to what I was doing. You will occasionally get somebody who thinks they're the white knight and they should be protecting other people from some imagined breach of their privacy, which they don't have when they're out on the street in a public place, of course. But by and large, if people catch you taking the shot, they'll smile. And if they don't smile, I'll smile and then they smile back. I'm tall and broad, so I'm not the most kind of camouflaged person to be walking around with a camera. So I don't try too hard to be invisible. I just try to be quick.
Tall and broad, you also might come across as intimidating, I would think.
Well, I don't think I'll probably come across too much as somebody that they would want to automatically pick a fight with or whatever. But, you know, I'm not trying to be threatening to anybody. So, if people catch me as or ideally just after I've taken their photo, I just smile. And if they want to see what I'm doing, I'll show them the picture and I'll explain to them what's going on. And I enjoy that kind of social aspect to it as well. Even though I would say most of my photography is driven by having always felt in some ways a little bit on the outside of things looking in. And photography then is an extension of that because there is that, don't like the word voyeuristic, but you know, you are looking at people through a piece of glass, which separates you a little bit from what's going on. And the trick then is to try to be immersed in the scene so that doesn't interfere with the picture.
There's an image on your Instagram feed. It was taken, well, it was posted on November 15th, and it's of a lady, and it looks like you're in the metro, okay? That's what we North Americans would call subway.
Yes.
It looks like you're in the metro, and it looks like you're sitting across from this lady in a red sweater. So there's that color, red. You love red. Maybe that's what attracted you. But you're sitting directly across from her, and if I'm not mistaken, I think I see a reflection of you to the left. I don't know if that's you, but I'm taking a guess. And anyway, she's looking at you and, you know, just as you've said, you know, most times people will just give you a smile. And she's like, to me, she's like just ready to crack a smile.
Yes.
Or a question. And I just wanted to ask you if you could talk a little bit more about that image to our listeners and what happened after when you took that shot, because she looked like she was on the verge of saying something or doing something and not threatening.
It's hard to say for sure what she was thinking, but she didn't seem upset that I'd taken the picture.
So she didn't say anything to you after?
No, just get a little bit of a twinkle from people and then they move on. It's not like I'm sitting there, you know, I've got my process, you know, the actual kind of process of taking the shot down to be fast enough that it's over and done with very quickly. So it's, you know, I'm not pointing the camera at somebody for 30 seconds while I'm focusing it and, you know, getting it, framing it up how I want.
But is that you in the image?
If I'm thinking of the right one, it will be, yes.
Okay. See, I like to think I have a pretty good eye when I look at an image. I try to really look at it.
I don't often post self-portraits, but I'm in quite a few of the shots. If you're taking a reflection shot, for example, where you can't avoid being in the image, then I'll be in it and I don't worry about that too much.
What's a tip you can give our listeners? I mean, you said very early on in our conversation that going out for you and taking images and, you know, just photographing people, right, just doesn't bother you. You know, you're not worried about the response. It's something that comes very easy for you. Let's be honest. I think predominantly people shy away from street photography because they're afraid. That's why they don't really do it, because they're too afraid to do it. They're afraid of what people are going to say and how they're going to react. So what would be one thing, seeing how you're apparently very good at it, what's a tip you can give our listeners that want to better their street photography, or maybe they're listening and they want to get into street photography?
There's a few tips. I mean, if you want to get into it, buy a cheap camera and a reasonably wide lens. You can always trade it in later on and get something better, and work out what you like to do. Just go around and take as many shots as you can. Work out what felt good to you to take. Work out what output you liked when it was finished. Then you know which direction to go in. So, you know, I quite quickly figured out I didn't really enjoy ultra wide or kind of, you know, anything less or wider than a 35mm equivalent wasn't interesting me so much. So I liked to be that little bit closer, and I wanted a wide enough lens to capture the action while I was doing that, but I didn't want to have too many things cluttering the image. I like quite complex photographs, but I want them to be complex because I've put it there, not because you couldn't stop it from being in there, if you know what I mean. In terms of getting over fear, yeah, I think you've just got to kind of work your way in some senses. I think if like me, and by the sounds of it, like you, you are interested in people, then you don't want to be at the other end of the street from taking the shot. So, but start with, you know, say a 50. And if you want to get closer and you want to go a little bit wider, then work your way towards that. Get over the fear at a distance that is just at, you know, just a bit beyond your comfort zone, and get comfortable with that. And then move slightly nearer in until you get in the kind of immediacy of the images that you want, because not everybody's going to want to shoot the same kind of picture. And I think the main tip I would give to people, because I think one of the reasons that I don't try to be stealthy when I'm taking the shots, one, I'm not built for it, but two, it's very easy doing that to look shifty and look as though you're doing something or trying to hide what you're doing, and you're doing something that you shouldn't be. And in the end, when you're out on the street, you're doing something you're perfectly entitled to be doing. Get yourself in a headspace where you can feel fairly relaxed with that, and you don't, you know, or at least feel confident that you're doing what you're allowed to do. And then if people do spot you, you just seem natural, and you just seem like you're doing something that you're meant to be doing. And if they see you, smile. If they want to talk, talk. If not, move on. And one trick I do, you know, I do use sometimes is that, without thinking about it now, but I think I first saw it in a film about Gary Winogrand, that he would be almost looking like he was fiddling with his camera and not quite sure what he was doing with it, but in the process of moving the camera around, apparently trying to get his settings right, he'd take the shot. So that can be useful. You just have to be careful you don't look as though you're being sneaky about it, because then people are more likely to take offense or think that, you know, you're a bit of a peeping Tom or something. And, you know, so you want to be, you've got to become at ease with yourself, really. Otherwise people might take it the wrong way.
Yeah, you have to be careful for sure. I mean, there's different techniques that one can use for sure. And sometimes there is no technique. Sometimes I just want to be blunt and that's it. I'll do it.
Yes.
When you're photographing, do you photograph for you or do you photograph for Instagram? And what I mean by that is, when you photograph, is it more of a, you know, it's a Steve thing. It's a me thing. I just want to be out here and I want to escape and I want to be in my own little world and I want to enjoy what I love to do. And that's street photography. Or are you approaching it with the attitude, you know, would this be Instagram worthy? Would this be social media worthy?
I really don't like Instagram, except that everybody has it. So therefore, if somebody does ask on the street and want to see your work, then that's the easiest place to show them. So I do upload onto there. I'm usually a few weeks behind getting the images up on Instagram. And especially, you know, the past year and a half, where they've gone chasing after the TikTok audience, really, and have de-emphasized photography. I think it's become a much worse platform for photographers. So where I put the work for people to, you know, that I want people to see and feedback on would be either Twitter or Vero. And Instagram is there because it's just a convenient forum to put stuff for people to have a quick look if they want to. I try to be, you know, really the only thing I'm interested in is, one, the kind of shots I like to take that please me. But also, you know, to lose myself in the process of doing that. I like to be absorbed in that, and I find it therapeutic as well, as much as anything. So I try to be disciplined that where it's possible to do it, like on Instagram, you know, I will, as soon as I've posted an image, I'll hide the likes and I never ever go back to see how many people have liked it, because that would risk me starting to try to please other people instead of please myself in the way that I'm shooting.
When people do approach you on the streets, and if they ask, what are you doing? And what's their reaction to that? When you do show them your Instagram feed, I'm assuming that's what it is, you're showing them. How do they normally react with you when they see your work after you tell them what you're doing?
I would say 99%+ people just think, oh, that's really cool. I never thought, you know, it never occurred to them that you could do that. And just make, you know, and again, it's this emphasis on trying to capture ordinary scenes, but make them into art. You know, they'll look at that and, yeah, actually, you know, there must be a lot of things on the street that I'd miss seeing, that if I looked more, then I'd probably see those kind of things. So it sometimes challenges people to change the way they look. Sometimes people get very enthusiastic about it and ask me to come and shoot something for them, which is nice. Can't think of any, looking back on it, where anybody's actually seen the work and then not liked it. You might occasionally get somebody who's got a very poor self-image, or you know, they're just very shy and they say, oh, you know, I'm really, I wouldn't like that to be out, and I'll respect that.
Steve, we're coming up to the end of our time here on the Street Photography Show, and I just wanted to say thank you for coming on and having this conversation with me. It was really fun. I really enjoyed learning more about you as a photographer and your work. For our listeners, where can they go to see your work?
The easiest place to do that is on Instagram, which is SKPhoto, ESS for Sierra, KAY Photo, the normal spelling, all one word. But the best place to see them is on Twitter, where you can see a larger version of the image. Or best of all, on a platform called Vero, which is a photography specific platform where they don't compress the images, so you can see them at, you know, something like their full size at least, and get the full impression of what's going on there. And it's the same handle on all of those.
We'll have the links in the show notes below so people can refer to that as well. Again, thank you so much. It was a blast having you on. Hope you had a great time as well.
Very much so, and I'm looking forward to following the rest of the podcast and seeing who else you have on. It'll be good.
It's been a blast. So yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciated it. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to follow and highly rate the show, as it allows me to continue creating more content for you, my awesome listeners. Also, don't forget to join us next week, as new episodes are added on Fridays. Until next time, keep walking and keep clicking. This is Mark Rossi. Bye for now.